This is Countryfile Live 2019, the podcast that lets you relive some of the best moments from the talks and presentations that happened in the National Trust Theatre at this year's BBC Countryfile Live event at Blenheim Palace. In this series, you'll hear from the likes of Ray Mears on the best time to get involved with nature, from J.B. Gill on his transition from fame to farming, and from our panel of expert gardeners who deal with all your gardening dilemmas. In this episode, we join Countryfile presenter Charlotte Smith in conversation with BBC wildlife expert and presenter Lizzie Daly. We learn how Lizzie balances her concern for the planet with the travel demands of her job, about the human-sized monsters which lurk meters from our coastline, and how time spent in nature can make a difference to our well-being.
This session is entitled Nature and Wellbeing, which is something we've been talking about in the tent all day. I suppose we better check, first off, is there a link for you between nature and well-being?
Absolutely, yeah, undeniably. So me personally, you know, I feel very lucky that for my job I'm able to go out and have these pretty epic encounters, you know, across the world. And for me, that may be my work, but on a personal level, I get so many positive benefits from spending time with wildlife, spending time in these extreme environments, and being out there and you know, physically and mentally. For me, it's a huge positive push as to why I do it, really, and why I love it.
And you've now turned that into a job. Now, for lots of us, getting out into nature is something we do to get away from work, actually.
Yeah.
So have you slightly ruined it by turning that into your job?
No, absolutely no. I mean, when you're on location, let's say, for example, here, you have a job, right? So the idea is not to just kind of enjoy it, and it's selfishly, a lot of the time I do kind of want to just put the camera away and be like, oh, this is my moment, I'm just loving it. But you have to remember that you are there to kind of share that story. And for me, that's always been a passion, is to kind of share what I'm seeing and share those stories with yourselves and with a wider audience. So it hasn't ruined it for me. If anything, I get to very luckily have these experiences, have these encounters, and then as a secondary kind of pass that on through film, through documentary filmmaking and things, and share it with others and hopefully make you guys feel the same.
So what's so joyous then about nature?
Everything. Everything. I'm quite an optimist, and I'm actually a conservationist, so you'd think I'd be really depressed all the time. I should be. But no, I mean, I'm generally quite a happy person, but I think the time that I spend in the field makes me feel alive. For me, there's lots that I take from nature, and I guess in my role, I'm trying to find new ways to try and get more people inspired by it, to go out and have these close encounters with nature. You know, not necessarily in Honduras, the other side of the world, but the nature that's on your doorstep, which kind of leads into, I recently did an event called Wild Ocean Week, and it was all about inspiring us to get outside, okay? So it was a week, I went around the UK with a filmmaker, and I documented as many wildlife encounters as possible as I could in the marine world. It was raising money for the Marine Conservation Society. I wanted to kind of show there is epic on our coasts. So we kind of, as a last minute, it was the last day, we went to go out and see blue sharks, and we were like, oh, it's too windy, you can't go offshore, so let's think about what we can do. And Cornwall's a beautiful place, I've lived there for a number of years, and I wanted to see really what's accessible. So we kind of put our dive kit on and just went for an hour and a half dive. And we just came across this, out of the murk came this barrel jellyfish. And they're quite distinctive, kind of like massive egg yolks floating towards you. So like, if you think about it that way, it's kind of nice. Makes you think of food, no? But yeah, I mean, for me, I know it's a barrel jellyfish. They're very distinctive, so I know it's not harmful to humans. And so that kind of allowed me to be like, wow, okay, is it really as big as I'm seeing? Because I was kind of turned away. My camera operator who was with me was already filming it, and I kind of turned and was like, what? And went in for a closer look. And it was as big as I was seeing it. But barrel jellyfish, they do get quite large in size. They're very known for being this big. But I've never swum with one this big and seen one of this size. So it was a real amazing encounter and one that you kind of just embrace and you're there and you're next to it and they're not really a fast species. So you're okay for speed. You can stay around with it for a while. We were with it for about, I think about just under an hour, so about 40 minutes roughly, because it was kind of doing laps and everything. And the bow jellyfish that come to these that close inshore, I mean, at this time of year, you will see lots of jellyfish. Has everyone seen a barrel jellyfish on our coast, or who has seen a barrel jellyfish? Me and you. Okay, great.
Do they come smaller? The range of sizes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we get a number of species off our coast. Barrel jellyfish, they are quite large. So if you see one washed up on the beach, which isn't uncommon at this time of year, you know, they can be about this big. This one was quite a lot bigger. It was about the same length as me. But yeah, you will get them kind of washing up on our beaches. But it was just absolutely the most enthralling encounter, because I'm very much in its environment, and the fact it is so large and it was such a big animal and quite unusual meant that I kind of was very humbled by that. And a lot of people seeing that may think, oh, jellyfish stinging, venomous, which you're right to, because a lot of jellyfish do actually are venomous. But yeah, this one was just phenomenal.
The joy of it for me when we spoke about it is actually this is not far away, and this is very accessible in a sense, in that this is... You often think British wildlife isn't that impressive, is it? But hey, look at that. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing about it, I mean, this is all for my campaign called Wild Ocean Week. I mean, it was just a week to celebrate just that, celebrate British wildlife. What do we have on our coast? And the great thing is, like, we had, you know, like, people from over in America ringing us and being like, what is it? And being like, is it going to kill me? Like, terror from the deep, which is ridiculous. So I had a battle with like all the US media teams about what it was. But like, they were asking the right questions. They were saying, what is it? You know, why do you get it on the coast? Why are they there? And actually, the amount of media coverage it got was brilliant. You know, on one video alone, it was like 2 million views in a couple of days. But only a small percentage of that was kind of like terror from the deep. I think most people were just like, wow, that's an epic jellyfish.
You don't just do local stuff. Your joy is taking you all over the world.
Yes, yeah, I'm very lucky to do so. So kind of inside and outside of wildlife film. But this was a recent trip. I went to Borneo in a place called Danam Valley. Absolutely amazing. You know, one of the last places of primary rainforest, completely untouched, completely wild. I was there with a group of students at Swansea University, and they were doing a geography trip, and my role was to talk about the epic wildlife you get there. It was just like the best. I think last month there was a research paper out about the world's tallest tropical tree, which Danam Valley has, the world's tallest tropical tree. It's on the right there. It's a yellow Maranti tree. It's part of a group called Dipterocarps. And while we were there, what was so special about it, because I don't have a geography background, you know, I'm a biologist, I'll be looking in the leaf litter and like all gross and being weird, and everyone else is kind of looking at the geology and the landscape. And for me, it really was inspiring kind of being in an environment that genuinely made me feel really alive. You know, it's a real sensory experience being in a rainforest like that. You've got noises, you've got the humidity, you've got just the most unusual things going on. And I guess that's the luxury of going to somewhere you've never been. But this really, to me, was like a wild place. And we happened to be there during a very special time. So it's called mast flowering. It's this kind of rare event that happens with trees. They basically go into like this massive flowering event that's triggered, they think, by El Nino years. But it's not always typical of that. So it's kind of like this rare event that happens. And it was going on when I was there, which kind of added to the element of, oh my goodness, everything is kind of alive, pollinators, it's all just active. So you can see a bit of kind of deforestation at the back there before we went into Danam Valley. But it's a very clear picture of this mast flowering. So, you know, all the trees kind of look like broccoli. It's like the best way to describe it. And there's a few like cauliflower in there. Those are the trees, the Dipterocarps, that are mast flowering. And that was kind of going across the forest. And then you've got like some incredible species there as well. So just look how enormous that is. It's absolutely enormous. So it's a giant long-horned grasshopper. It's just the best thing ever. I'm just kind of showing you pictures of a epic Borneo wildlife. But things like this, you know, I have a little bit of an entomology background, but coming across something like this just makes everybody intrigued and interested, and you can notice how the students are really excited by it. And there's also something else really exciting. Does anyone know what this is?
Any guesses? Shout them out. I'm going dragonfly, sort of.
Okay, yeah, I mean,
because it's got the stained glass.
Yep, nice stained glass, yeah. Like a chapel almost.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Anyone else?
Shout out.
A moth?
Not a wasp or a moth. It's not one of the... It's actually a cicada. Cicada, cicada. But there's something really interesting going on here. It's not just any cicada. It's been kind of parasitized by a fungi. So it's a fungi called Cordyceps, right? And then... It's so exciting. So as you're going through the jungle, if you see this, I mean, you have to really take a closer look. If you look at the main abdomen, you can see it's kind of like mossy. That's the fungi, right? And that fungi is released into the forest environment. It's kind of released into the environment with spores, and it'll enter the bodies of ants and cicadas. It then takes over the body processes and basically the mind of that animal. That cicada will walk along the floor, walk up to the tree, bite into the tree, and then it will kill it. And then that spore, that fungi, will now have a higher leverage to release more of its spores and take over the rainforest.
It's like Cybermen.
I know, it's, and that's nature. I mean, we can just leave it there, to be honest.
Obviously, this makes you happy.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a physical element to being outside, to being in nature as well, a physical health benefit?
Absolutely, yeah. So, no, for sure. I mean, for me, I've always... So my family, we used to go camping quite a lot. Whenever we went on any holiday, it was put on a rucksack and go camping. And there's this element of just kind of like being in the environment, moving through an environment yourself, you know, whether it's hiking or walking or, well, whatever, really. I've really enjoyed the physical benefits of it, and I regularly go hiking up mountains to go camping and see wildlife and things. So,
how's your attitude? I mean, this slide here.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in...
That's Southeast Alaska. So this is a tidewater glacier. Speaking kind of about how environments have inspired me. So I've kind of just included loads of things that have really inspired me, and this was one time where I was just like, the sound of a glacier carving is just phenomenal. So this glacier is called Hubbard Glacier, and it's hard to wrap your head around looking at the picture, but its face is about 6 miles long, what you're looking at there. And then from source to sea, it's about 72 miles long. It's enormous, so it's the largest tidewater glacier on the North American continent. And for me, it was the sound of seeing this carving. And we talked about this yesterday, actually. The carving behavior of glaciers isn't always indicative of climate change, but with tidewater glaciers, some kind of advance and some kind of retreat at all times. And this is one of them. This is a very active glacier. And just sitting there on a boat and seeing this ice kind of carve off, the noise of it, it's just enormous. It's so humbling. Yeah.
This is something we've talked about over the past 4 days in the tent, the threats to nature. Something the National Trust is involved with as well. And I wonder if the well-being aspect of seeing something so immense and so amazing that now at the back of your mind there's also a concern about what it would look like if you went back in 20 years and what's happening.
Yes, and I was reading about this the other day, actually, and I'm finding it quite interesting because... I can ask the audience about this. If you're walking through a street and you're holding a plastic water bottle, does anyone feel guilty? Like, do you feel like you're being looked at, or is that just me?
Stick your hand up if you feel slightly awkward.
You do. Right. It's actually been... There's this thing called eco-anxiety. I was talking about it yesterday. And it's this whole thing that people of younger generations at the moment are struggling with the fact that, and I don't know what you think about this, I just find it quite interesting because it's become a thing where people are really concerned about the issues facing our planet, and they don't feel like they can do anything about it. And it's got to a point now where it's actually become what's called eco-anxiety. Being in an environment like this, you do get an element of, oh gosh, it's very bittersweet in a way, because you feel very lucky to be there, but at the same time, how did you get there? What was the carbon emission and your footprint on the way there? And it's really a balance of kind of appreciating what's there, trying to conserve what's there, but being aware that we need to do more and much quicker. Yeah, it's tricky.
We're supposed to be talking about nature and well-being. We keep going slightly off the point.
Yeah, I know. I have lots of slides.
Go on.
I do.
Does anyone we've got about 1 minute left.
We've got 1 minute? Okay, I need to show you, because this is one of my favourite encounters ever. This was with a humpback whale. So humpback whales make this, again, in Southeast Alaska, make this migration from Hawaii, 3,000 miles in the summer, to here. And should we see some breaching, just because it makes everyone happy? So we were very lucky to see humpback whale behaviour and some like tail slapping and breaching, and it's just like all these humpback whales with their spouts, like, and it was just the best encounter. Has anyone seen humpback whales? Yeah, do you know we get humpback whales here in our waters off of like the Scottish coast? You can see humpbacks. And in Cornwall, actually. There's a humpback whale called, what's her name?
I don't
Sally or something. There's
really?
Like, yeah, yeah.
We haven't been introduced.
Okay, I'll have to do that. Yeah, there's one humpback whale that comes back to the Cornwall area. But anyway, so amazing animals, but this wasn't the most exciting thing. You know, my background's in biology, and I've always wanted to see this one behavior called bubble net feeding. So if you see this, so humpback whales, right, he's like, yes, it's epic. if you see humpback whales, if you see lots of different spouts, that's a good sign, because these baleen whales, there are larger whales, and they're typically solitary. So if you see lots of spouts, that's a sign that you're probably about to see this cooperative feeding behavior called bubble net feeding. And at the surface, it kind of looks a bit like this. So we watched 8 individual humpback whales, it was around 8, and they were all working together. How it works is one kind of leads it. They kind of like signal to all dive down at one time. So they're underwater and create, it's like synchronized swimming, right, for humpback whales, underwater in a massive ring around a food source. And then they start to blow bubbles underwater, which creates almost like a net around that food source. And then that one whale will do what's called a scream. It's called a scream, sounds a bit like a scream. And it'll signal for all the other whales to lunge feed to the surface at one time to eat all that food source. And it's not seen anywhere else. And like, think about up to 20 humpback whales can do this behavior. And I was like, I'm in Southeast Alaska, I want to see this behavior. And I was very lucky to see it. So this is what it looked like from the boat. And then I'm going to show you kind of an aerial perspective. So watch the seabirds. They know where it's coming. They can see where the humpback whales are coming, and they kind of make a beeline over to the surface, where you get all these massive mouths just making the most of this food resource. It's just like, it really humbles you because you're so small in comparison to something like this. And to see such a large animal working together in that way, this is an aerial perspective. And you can see that kind of ring around that food source there, and they really do make the most of that space and of that food source. And I wanted to share that with you because I think it makes everyone feel happy, no? It's just me.
Okay, yeah. Who feels happy? How many people did it work on? Well, it worked on me. Ladies and gentlemen, she is a force of nature herself, the wonderful Lizzie Daly.
Thanks for listening to this extract from the many talks and debates that happened in the National Trust Theatre at BBC Countryfile Live 2019. To learn more about this and other audio programmes from the National Trust, go to nationaltrust.org.uk/podcasts. And to purchase your ticket for BBC Countryfile Live 2020, go to countryfilelive.com. This is a National Trust podcast recorded at BBC Countryfile Live 2019.